Since 2003, the BC Liberals have carried out a sweeping privatization of health support services. To date, 8,500 public sector jobs have been eliminated and the work contracted out. As a result, wages have been cut by almost half. A new study says that privatized jobs in hospitals and nursing homes are substandard in all respects. The study is titled "The Pains of Privatization." It is based on interviews with 24 workers employed in housekeeping and food services jobs in Greater Vancouver area. Nancy Pollock is a writer and a researcher who's been involved with social justice issues for years. She's one of the authors of the report, and she joins me by phone this morning. Good morning, Nancy.
Hi, Lorraine.
Why did you decide to do an interview-based study?
Well, we decided that we wanted to find out what was really going on for the people who are doing these privatized jobs. For the people who are, you know, cleaning our hospitals, serving food in our nursing homes, we wanted to get away from just sort of dry statistics, find out what's happening for them at work, what's happening for them at home, how their physical, emotional, spiritual health is being affected by these jobs and their working conditions. We wanted to find out how their kids and their other family members were being affected, and even whether their communities were being affected. From there, we wanted to take a look at what kind of implications this would have for our society and also for the healthcare system as a whole.
What did the workers you spoke with have in common in terms of their backgrounds?
Well, the majority of people we spoke with were women. They were also people of color and immigrants. They were mainly over the age of 45. And all of these characteristics are similar to the workforce in general. You know, the people who do hospital support work are largely female. Many of them are women of color from immigrant backgrounds. And most of them are over the age of 45. They're also people who have kids and are often helping to support family overseas as well.
I mentioned in my introduction that wages had dropped dramatically as a result of privatization. What effect has that had on the people that you spoke with?
Well, yeah, you're right. The wages were cut by about 40%. And we now have a situation in BC where people doing these jobs are earning about 26% below the average union wage for the equivalent job in Canada. So they're way at the bottom of the barrel right now. It wasn't just their wages that were cut. They also had their pensions were eliminated. These people have no pensions, their long-term disability, their parental leave. There were huge cutbacks to the vacation, the medical and dental benefits, and very little sick time. So, I mean, this is a pretty grim portrait that we're portraying here. And what we found, not surprisingly, is that all but one of the workers involved in the study said that their income was inadequate to their needs. And so that was their, you know, subjective appraisal of what was going on for them as far as money was concerned. But when we looked at it on a factual basis, we found that 83% of them were living below the poverty line.
Wow.
So that's the low-income cutoff standard that's set by Statistics Canada. So for instance of that would be a single mom with two kids. She and her family are living 44% below the poverty line. That she's bringing home about $1,426 a month. She works cleaning a hospital, and she and her family are way below the poverty line. So, you know, that's a very simple way of describing what's happening for these people.
So these people really have become, these women have become the working poor.
They are the working poor. These women and men are the working poor, and dramatically working poor. And, you know, I guess it goes without saying that the work they're doing is incredibly important, and it's skilled work as well.
How have working conditions been affected by the privatization?
The working conditions have been affected on a number of levels. For one thing, people are working harder than they used to work. There's been what's known in the lingo as work intensification. So their workload has gone up, the pace of their work has gone up, and most of the workers report that they're unable to work safely because of the excessive load and because of the excessive time demands on them. They have unpredictable work assignments. In the past, people would pretty well know where they were expected to do the cleaning work that day. Now they get shifted around quite a bit. They have difficult relationships with their supervisors, and these, of course, are the supervisors who are employed by the corporations that are contracted to do this work. The difficulty in those relationships are that they often find they feel that their supervisors aren't particularly skilled or well-trained themselves. So the kind of support and backup that they would hope to be getting from a supervisor is just not there. They're also finding, and this relates to the excessive workload, that there's very high staff turnover. People are not happy in these jobs, so they're coming and going at quite a rate. And high staff turnover, of course, makes it difficult for the people who are left behind. And there is frequent short staffing, so people will call in sick or simply not report to work, and the companies are not necessarily replacing them. So people are having their workload doubled for a shift.
This must be taking a tremendous toll on their physical and mental health. What did they say to you about that?
Well, it does. And what we found was that, 60% of the people in this study reported getting sick or injured on the job. That's an incredible figure, and it's even more incredible when you realize that most of them had been on the job for less than 9 months. So they're getting sick, they're getting hurt, they're not necessarily taking sick time, because on the one hand, their sick time provisions are about as low as they can get. They get 2 days in 6 months, and they can't even accumulate that. If they don't use their 2 days in one six-month period, they can't carry it over to another. So they're reluctant to take that time. So they're coming to work not feeling well and with injuries. They also, and this is quite a figure, we asked them how they would rate their health. And 17% of the people in this study rated their health as being poor. Now, we compared this to a massive survey of the BC workforce in general and how they rated their health, and only 1% of BC workers rate their personal health as being poor, and we have 17% of our people doing that.
Wow, that's stunning.
Yeah, and you know, what we're talking about here is enormous levels of fatigue, musculoskeletal injuries, pain, headaches, nausea, and then actual injuries, cuts, burns, muscle pulls, being vulnerable to flus and colds, because you know when you're worn out, your immune system is compromised and you're vulnerable to things. And of course you're working in hospitals where there's lots of sick people, so you end up becoming a sick person yourself.
When you talk about 17% of workers self-defining as having poor health, that must also have a tremendous kind of ripple effect on their families and their communities.
Well, yeah, that was the other thing that we wanted to look at. I mean, we don't see people as being just individual units. We know that they're going home and especially the women, they're going home and taking care of other people as well. And these jobs have huge consequences for their families. I mean, we found that people were talking about, well, literally not having any emotional oomph left for their families. And this is mothers, fathers, grandparents who just don't have it to be paying attention to their children. I interviewed one man who basically said, I'm just an absent person from the house and my kids are complaining about it. Numbers of people talked about how their kids were complaining that they didn't see them much anymore. And that was for a couple of reasons. One is people were tired at the end of their very difficult work day. Also, 40% of the people in our study had at least one other job in an effort to make ends meet, so they really weren't around. So, you know, that was just the emotional relationships were being hurt. But also with this, these living below the poverty line, and these were, some of these workers were people who had formerly been employees covered by the hospital employees union contract, where they were earning considerably more money. The families were having to do cutbacks. They were canceling vacations. They were canceling music lessons. They were not having outings. They were not enrolling their kids in karate classes. And just a general shrinking of possibilities of participating in their community. Numbers of them were canceling their plans, their plans to take courses themselves, and a few were unable to ante up the money to send their kids to college. So there was a lot of difficulty and disappointment happening there. And the other thing that we noted is that, you know, it costs money to have a social life. And I mean that on the very simple level of if you're having people over, you know, you want to be able to provide them with food. And we had a number of people in the study who said they basically were hoping that it would rain so that the picnic that they had been invited to would be canceled, because they were pretty sure they weren't going to be able to reciprocate it. And that was both on the level of being able to afford it and also just having the emotional juice to have a social life.
That is really brutal.
Yeah, it is. And, I think people can understand what that feels like. It's a kind of enforced depression. It's both an economic depression and an emotional and social depression that some people are suffering.
You make the point in your study that the corporations that employ these workers can easily get away with providing poor working conditions and pay. Why is that?
Yeah, well, we essentially see that what has been created here is a modern sweatshop situation that has been created by government policy. And the reason it can happen today is because the corporations who are creating these substandard working conditions and pay conditions understand that they have a pool of vulnerable people who they can exploit. They basically recognize that there are workers who are, in quotes, disposable and easily replaced. And what I'm referring to are the barriers that immigrant people face, and in particular, immigrant women of color face in the Canadian workforce. It's well documented that unemployment is much higher amongst that group of people, and they are easily exploited for that reason. When you're vulnerable to unemployment, you have to tolerate intolerable conditions because you don't have a choice. So one of the things that we note in this study is that many of the immigrant women who are doing these jobs have credentials, have educational qualifications that should be making them eligible for different jobs and better paid jobs, professional jobs, in fact. But they are facing the systemic barriers that we have in our society, where their credentials aren't recognized, where they face barriers of racism, and so they are ended up in these jobs where they're being exploited on the basis of their sex, their race, and their immigrant status.
What are the broader repercussions for the healthcare system of the kind of working conditions that you're describing and that you've heard about from these people?
Well, there are many of them, and let me just talk about a few of them. We've got a situation here where people who are cleaning our hospitals and providing food for our sick and elderly people are being treated with enormous disrespect, subjected to really difficult working conditions, being overworked. They have high job dissatisfaction. About 58% of the people in our study said they were dissatisfied, either dissatisfied or very dissatisfied with their job, and that compares with 12% of the BC workforce in general who say that they are dissatisfied with their jobs. So lots of dissatisfaction. And that dissatisfaction, besides being a sign of a lot of painful personal experiences, leads to a kind of disengagement with the workforce. and disengaged people, they don't work as well. Well, they can't work as well because they're not being supported to work well. And that ends up being harmful to the whole system. And although this study didn't take a close look at what's happening to standards of cleanliness or food service standards, the workers we talked to were very concerned about the standards of cleanliness in their workplaces and also concerns about the quality of food being delivered. And what we're seeing in other standards that is other studies rather, is that there are tremendous risks to our hospitals and nursing homes to do with falling standards of cleanliness, to do with dismantling the teamwork system. You know, we've now got people doing these very important jobs who are not integrated into the personnel in these institutions. They're off on their own, employed by transnational corporations. They've been cut off. For instance, the housekeeping staff are cut off from the infection control team, which is almost an incredible thing to realize in this era of, you know, rampant hospital-acquired infection, that we would be allowing our the people who clean our hospitals to not be connected to the infection control team, but that is indeed what's happening. And just in general, a loss of public accountability. So, you know, we see deteriorating standards of cleanliness, and we expect that there are going to be long-term, down-the-road harms to the system, both in terms of if you've got a lot of sick and injured workers, that isn't good for the healthcare system. If you've got high staff turnover, that's not good for the system. If you've got families being disrupted, educational opportunities lost, that's not good for our healthcare system or our social welfare system at all, because this is going to lead to problems in our communities when families are being hurt in this way. And essentially what we see is we've got a situation where we've got private companies who are trying to make money off of cleaning hospitals and serving hospital food, and those private companies have two different obligations. They've got an obligation to their shareholders to produce a profit, and they also have a contractual obligation to health authorities to, you know, produce some kind of a quality service. And there is a built-in tension between those two obligations, because the way you make money at this kind of work is by having a really flexible labor pool. That's the jargon. You know, you can move people around, you can let go of them when you need to. So a really flexible labor pool and also really low labor costs. And of course, that's exactly what we see happening here. Is these people have no job security, and their pay is scandalously low. But the way you produce a quality service is by having a well-trained, well-supported, stable staff who are committed to their jobs and feel that their employer is committed to them. So you can't have both. You can't have the profit and you can't have the quality service, and we're seeing that playing out in our system today.
Well, the report really does reveal what, I mean, should be a scandalous situation. It is a scandalous situation. Are there places where you feel that people can put pressure to exert some kind of influence over this situation?
Yeah, I think there are, and well, there's obviously an opportunity presented in our upcoming election to make this be something that we want candidates to respond to, and I'll leave it to people to figure out how to do that, since the NDP have said they won't be continuing with privatization, but they don't seem to be expressing a willingness to undo the privatization that's already happened, which is really unfortunate. But the thing about this situation is that every one of us is going to be connected to a hospital and possibly a nursing home at some point in our lives, if not next week or the week after, and many of us are. And we're going into these hospitals and nursing homes, and we're seeing what's happening to the standards of the cleaning standards and the food standards. And just as, you know, BCers, we need to be letting the health authorities know just how unhappy we are with what's happening to these standards, and also to let them know that we don't want as a society to be letting government policies create sweatshop conditions, because that is what has happened here. This is not the result of sort of ordinary market forces. This is a law was passed that paved the way for this privatization. It, in effect, is being done in our name, and we should be protesting it.
Nancy, thanks for joining me this morning. It's really been interesting.
You're welcome, Lorraine. It was great to talk with you.
Okay, nice to talk to you, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I've been speaking with Nancy Pollock. She's one of the authors of The Pains of Privatization, and you can download the report for free at policyalternatives.ca.